May it please the court. My name is Carrie Hershey, registration 34246, and I represent Judy Bach. The questions at issue in this appeal can all be answered by referring to the agreements between the parties. Dr. Bach seeks only that for which she contracted and appeals only those rulings of the trial court that depart from the actual language of the parties' agreements. If Dr. Bach were disabled due to a car accident or to cancer, I suspect we wouldn't be here today. We're here because Dr. Bach is mentally ill. Horizon and Dr. Oster argue for a result that strays from the actual terms of the parties' agreements. They argue that Dr. Bach is not owed her share of Horizon profits. She's not owed actual value for her interest in the practice that she built, or proceeds of the disability policy for which she personally paid because of her conduct, conduct that's the result of a mental illness. They argue that she is not entitled to her share of Horizon because she entered an agreement with the medical board to cease practice until she was cleared by her healthcare providers to return to practice. Yet these parties contracted for disability. The trial court erred in interpreting several of the contracts at issue in this case. First, Horizon and Dr. Oster argue, and the trial court agreed, that the disability termination provision and the for-cause termination provision for failure to perform were separate and independent, and both served as independent bases upon which Horizon could terminate the agreement. The question here, however, is if failure to perform is based on the disability, can the for-cause provision be invoked? You need only look to Section 10 of the employment agreement for the answer. Section 10 of the employment agreement defines disability. It defines it as the inability to perform the physician's duties under the employment agreement, including the requirement to have an unrestricted medical license. Thus, a disability doesn't even exist under the agreements unless the physician is unable to perform her duties, including having an unrestricted medical license.
Ms. Hershey, let me ask you a question about one provision of the contract regarding the termination for cause. It provides that a termination for cause can occur if the physician's continued working would jeopardize the health or care of any of Horizon's patients. Could that provision not apply in the circumstances here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in fact, the reason that Dr. Bach could no longer practice is because her mental illness impaired her ability to practice safely.
But isn't that provision part of the possible reasons for termination for cause?
That provision, the employment agreement provides four bases for termination, one of which includes inability to perform your duties safely and practice in a safe manner. If your inability to practice in a safe manner, however, is due to disability, the disability provision controls because disability is defined as being unable to practice safely.
Well, then it seems like those two provisions may be read as conflicting with one another.
No, actually, I believe they can be harmonized. And for the same reason, one of the other bases for termination is death. If a physician is deceased, clearly they can't perform their duties and their medical license could be impacted. The question is, though, the death is the reason you can't perform. Similarly here, the disability is the reason that she can't perform safely. And if you allow termination, if disability is the sole reason for her inability to perform, you render the disability provisions meaningless of the contract, because an employer could always then terminate for cause in the event of a disability or a death, and those provisions wouldn't mean anything.
Well, I'm not sure if that would always be the case. I mean, you said at the beginning of your argument that if this were a situation of someone with cancer, that we wouldn't be here today. Well, if someone if a physician has cancer under the terms of this contract, that person would clearly be disabled, and but not necessarily affecting the care or treatment of other patients of Horizon, whereas someone with a mental illness might be in a different situation. Maybe yes, maybe no, depending on the nature of the mental illness.
If an illness causes a physician to be unable to practice safely for any reason, under the Medical Practices Act, it is a violation of the Medical Practices Act for that physician to continue practicing. Section 1236.11710 of the Medical Practices Act provides that having a physical or mental disability that impairs your safety to practice is unprofessional conduct under the Act. A physician who has a disability, Dr. Buck, if she had broken her arm, for example, if she had broken her arm, she would be unable to practice safely. She would be unable to deliver babies safely. That is a disability that in and of itself requires her to limit her practice under the Medical Practices Act. Now, the Medical Practices Act was recently changed, and the disability itself no longer is unprofessional conduct. What the Medical Practices Act now requires is that a physician report the disability and enter an agreement with the medical board to practice within the limitations of the disability. That's exactly what Dr. Bach did here. She reported in August 2006 that she was disabled due to mental disability. The only action that the medical board took at that time was to request Dr. Bach to go to CPHP, the Physician's Health Program, and be evaluated. Dr. Bach complied with that request, presented to CPHP, and on November 22nd, 2006, CPHP issued its report and determined that Dr. Bach was mentally ill and that illness impaired her ability to practice.
Now, in this case, Dr. Bach stipulated to, you know, not continuing to practice. Would she have been better off for purposes of this agreement to actually make the board take action against her? I mean, I'm just wondering whether, you know, that situation would lead to a different result here.
I think ultimately it would lead to the same result, because if a physician is unsafe to practice and the board knows and the physician doesn't voluntarily agree to restrict themselves, then the board, in order to protect the public, has to take action to suspend that physician. Dr. Bach acknowledged that she wasn't safe to practice. Dr. Bach did exactly what we would expect physicians who have a health condition that impairs their safety to do. She reported her condition to her practice, to the hospital where she worked, and to the board, and said, I cannot practice. I am mentally ill, and it impairs my safety. And I agree voluntarily to limit my practice so that patients aren't in jeopardy.
And her partner did not dispute her disability, is that correct?
There was no dispute and no testimony that Dr. Bach was not disabled. And the court, in fact, found that Dr. Bach was disabled. The issue is that the practice and Dr. Oster assert that Dr. Bach's conduct was inappropriate. But there is no finding that Dr. Bach's conduct, which was the result of her disability as determined by her physicians, that conduct led to her stipulation with the board. The stipulation on its face deals with Dr. Bach's health condition.
Argue that her conduct is what's at issue in this case? Or do they argue that, no, there are four independent ways of terminating and we get to choose if the circumstances fit two or more of those ways of terminating?
At trial, they argued both, Your Honor.
Do they argue it on appeal?
On appeal, I believe that they argue that there's four independent bases and they get to choose between those independent bases. The next area in which the trial court did not properly construed the contracts is when it reduced the purchase price of Dr. Bach's interest in Horizon for a theoretical loss of goodwill. The trial court reasoned that goodwill was a significant part of the buy-in price, and Dr. Bach was the only owner prior to Dr. Oster's buying in. Therefore, when Dr. Bach left, the court concluded that there had been a loss of goodwill. Yet there was no evidence at trial that there had been any loss of goodwill. And it, consistent with this court's rulings, goodwill is an incidence of continuing business, having a particular locality or name, and an expectation of continued and repeated public patronage. All of the evidence in trial was that Horizon continued to keep the same patients, the same referral sources, operate in the same location. The evidence was that Horizon thrived even in the absence of Dr. Bach.
How long after Dr. Bach left was trial conducted in this case?
Trial occurred Dr. Bach ceased practice in August 2006, and trial took place in January of 2010. So several years. And Horizon continued to thrive, and that was all the testimony, although I will tell you that the trial court prohibited discovery beyond August 2007. The court would not allow any discovery into the current.
So basically the patronage evidence was as of August 2007?
Largely, however, Dr. Oster's expert opened the door with respect to an issue about their physician employment contracts and the salary of their current physician employment contract.
I'm talking more to the patronage, locality, things like that. Would have been as of August 2007.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Accordingly, the court did not have a basis in the evidence to reduce the purchase price of Dr. Bach's interest in Horizon. Similarly, the court erred when it deprived Dr. Bach her share of practice profits under the operating agreement. The operating agreement required equal distribution of profits, and in fact, prior to Dr. Bach's illness, Dr. Oster only worked part-time and Dr. Bach worked full-time, yet they both had equal distributions of profit. In this situation, however, understanding that Dr. Bach was owed profits for the time under the operating agreement for which she maintained her interest, Horizon instructed its accountant not to file a return pending, and I quote, consideration of other possible methods of allocating the income other than the operating agreement. It then zeroed out Dr. Bach's ownership interests and deprived her of any profit distributions. The trial court approved this, finding that Dr. Oster was entitled to a larger salary. It did that based on a salary that was used for purposes of valuation, not based on the actual employment agreement of Dr. Oster that accounted for her salary and also accounted for bonuses related to increased production.
It says a base salary of $180,000. Does it preclude a salary greater than that?
No, it doesn't. And in fact, it had a calculation to allow Dr. Oster additional compensation based on her production. So the fact that she worked more under the actual employment agreement would allow her to recoup greater salary. Finally, Dr. Bach's overhead insurance policy was purchased for herself several years before she even became partners with Dr. Oster. She paid the policy premiums out of her personal funds, yet the court ruled that she was unjustly enriched by keeping the proceeds of that policy. The policy is a contract and has to be interpreted as such. She is the owner and beneficiary of the policy. She paid for the policy out of her personal proceeds, yet the court found she was unjustly enriched by keeping those proceeds. Even if you determined that Dr. Bach would be required to put the policy proceeds back into the practice, that would simply increase the profits of the practice to which she was entitled to half of. However, Horizon can't have it both ways. They can't have Dr. Bach personally pay for an insurance policy, seek to collect the benefits of the proceed based on the argument that she's responsible for them as an owner, yet deprive her of the policy proceeds, deprive her of her share of the profit.
She couldn't get any of those proceeds, though, unless Horizon actually incurred those expenses.
Unless she incurred the expenses.
Unless Horizon's overhead expenses were incurred.
May I respond to the question,
Yes, you
Your
may.
Honor? Dr. Bach's position was that her profits from that she was owed under the practice were covering her expenses. Therefore, profits she would have otherwise been distributed were covering her expenses, and she kept the policy proceeds in a separate account pending the outcome of the lawsuit. Thank you.
Please the court. I'm Karen Brody with the law firm of Lau, Fell, and Skog, representing the Appalese Horizon Women's Professional Care LLC and Dr. Heidi Oster. And with me today is my partner, Ken Skog, and also our client, Dr. Heidi Oster, is sitting in the audience today. I'd like to address the specific arguments that Ms. Hershey raised in her opening statements. And first of all, with respect to whether or not the trial court improperly negated the disability provisions of her employment agreement. The problem with Dr. Bach's position is that the agreement that they would like to have and that the trial court refused to have to enforce just doesn't exist. What we have here is an unambiguous employment agreement. There was no question from either one of the parties that this was an employment agreement. Both parties agreed it was enforceable, and both parties agreed it was unambiguous, and in fact, the court found that. This employment agreement specifically said that there were four ways in which Dr. Bach could be terminated, and it was very, very clear. Each one of those four ways was separated by a semicolon, and the word or was between the third and fourth way in which the Dr. Bach could be terminated. And what it said is that this agreement shall terminate in the event of notice to either party, if either one of the parties decided to voluntarily do that, for cause. And one of the for cause provisions was that if the doctor failed to maintain the necessary requisites, which are referenced in paragraph 3G of her employment agreement, she could be terminated for cause without notice and without an opportunity to cure. She could be terminated for a disability after 1 year, or she could be terminated for death. Now, to first of all get to Ms. Hershey's point about the death provisions and how there seemed to be an inherent inconsistency in the agreement, there isn't, because what this agreement says is that this agreement shall terminate in the event that the physician dies. That's it. You couldn't actually also terminate the physician for cause, because they would have died, and there would be no reason for the for cause provisions to apply.
Let me ask you, counsel, is it your position that you could have terminated either for cause or for disability?
You could in this situation, and this is
in this situation.
In this situation.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
If you agree with that, is why would you ever, ever terminate for disability, given the economic advantages of terminating for cause?
What's very important is that the disability provision here, what it says is that you can terminate the physician if they're disabled after 1 year. And so they would have to be disabled for 1 year. That is not why this physician was terminated. You would have to wait for 1 year before you could do it. The for cause provision is different, and it means that the physician has done something to impact their...
I understand, but you just said you could terminate under either of those provisions, and why would you ever terminate under the disability provision, given the economic incentives to terminate for cause?
Because not all circumstances would the doctor ever have a for cause situation occur.
Not all circumstances, but you said in this situation it fell under both provisions.
Well, it fell under both. No. If I said that, Your Honor, I apologize. I misspoke. Mm-hmm. In this case, we had a physician who alleged that she became disabled. She was not terminated for disability because she was not disabled for 1 year. Instead, during that period, that one-year period when she was, she could have been, it had to elapse before she could be terminated for disability, there was circumstances that occurred in which the for-cause provisions of that contract arose, and that is, under Section 3G, she had to maintain necessary requisites, meaning the ability to practice medicine without a medical license, without restriction. And in this case, this doctor entered into a stipulation for interim cessation of practice with the Colorado Board of Medical Examiners because she had fired a gun, she had become intoxicated, they had initiated an investigation, and they were going to institute summary proceedings against her to possibly revoke her license entirely. And to avoid all of that, she entered into a provision which restricted her medical license. There was no question that she could not practice medicine without restriction.
And the trial court found, as a matter of fact, which is unchallenged on appeal, that she was continuously disabled since August 13, 2006.
That's true, but the important point here is that not every disability means that you cannot maintain the necessary requisites.
Well, let's look at the definition of disability. Doesn't it mean, what are the terms of disability in the contract?
What the terms of disability in the contract are is that it says that the physician is unable to perform their responsibilities due to a physical or mental illness.
Including responsibilities under Sections 3, which I think encompasses Section 3G as well.
The important point here, Your Honor, is that this doctor was terminated under the for-cause provisions because she lost her ability to practice without restriction. Any disability would not necessarily cause that to happen, and I'll go to the example of the cancer that was raised earlier. You could have cancer, and you could become disabled, meaning that you're unable to perform your duties as a result of a physical illness, but that does not mean, and there was no evidence in the record, that you would lose your ability to practice medicine without restriction.
That's true. That's true. There can be some disabilities that you have an inability to perform for some reasons, but included within that disability paragraph is inability to perform because of your failure to do your Section 3 responsibilities.
That's true, but there's nothing in this agreement that said we didn't terminate her for a disability, and we couldn't have until she was disabled for 1 year. So the disability thing, there's nothing in this agreement that really, with respect to disability, that's relevant. What counsel is asking you to believe is that somehow she was terminated because of her disability, but in fact she was terminated not because of her disability, but because she failed to perform the necessary requisites under her employment agreement. And the important thing is that this agreement allows that to occur. The agreement is clear. These parties certainly could have agreed to other terms. The agreement does not say, there is nowhere in that employment agreement in which it says that when you become disabled, you get a free pass on the other provisions of your employment agreement, or you get a bye, or you get to ignore them. It simply doesn't say that. It says that you can be terminated for disability after 1 year, but if during that period of disability, before that 1 year elapses, you violate one of the necessary requisites, you can still be terminated. And that's what the clear language of the agreement says, and it has to be enforced as written. There was no question that we have an unambiguous agreement here. The statements don't conflict. They're independent statements, and so it has to be enforced as written.
Counsel, why shouldn't we conclude that Horizon essentially jumped the gun by firing her before that year lapse, when, one, I mean, there's a very specific provision that applies to disabilities, but it requires that 1 year wait. And then, two, when Horizon, in fact, helped her collect on the overhead policy by, you know, essentially agreeing that she had a disability. Why shouldn't we say, you know, you should have waited your additional 6 months?
Well, we didn't have to wait the additional 6 months or whatever it was, because that's not what the agreement said. We didn't help her obtain the overhead reimbursement. That was something, and I will certainly address that, but that was not something that we found out after the fact that she was doing that. We think it was improper and it was not permitted, but in fact she took the practice financials and collected the reimbursement of the overhead policy. That was not with our consent. And in fact, the evidence in the record was that we were asking all along, what about the overhead policy? When are we going to see the proceeds? And we never saw it because we didn't realize that she was actually collecting them and taking them for her own benefit. But the point is that this agreement, we didn't have to wait. I mean, it would have been improper to terminate her before the year was up for disability. But it was not improper to terminate her for cause at any time, even before that one-year period elapsed, because that's what the plain language of the employment agreement provided. And I think it's also very important, if you go back to paragraph 3G of that employment agreement, it says that that position, at all times, and it specifically says those three words, at all times under the term of this agreement, must maintain those necessary requisites. So given that, it does not allow a physician who happens to claim a disability for a period of time before 1 year has expired to get a free pass and to take action that would impair other aspects of the employment agreement. But this physician did not have to take action that would cause her medical license to be restricted, but she did. And so that is why she was terminated for cause.
Ms. Brody, I know that your position is that Horizon and Dr. Oster had the option of choosing grounds for termination. But was there any evidence presented as to how these alternative provisions would operate if they were deemed to conflict with one another?
There was not, because the argument was made just as we have made it here today in the trial court, was that there were four bases. And this is what the trial court found, and we believe was correct, is that there were four independent bases, and that you could, if the one-year period of the disability had not elapsed, you could still terminate the physician for cause if that physician let the necessary requisites lapse. And I think the important point is that there was evidence presented that just because a physician becomes disabled doesn't mean he or she cannot perform those necessary requisites. The reason it applies in this case is because this physician took action which resulted in her losing her ability to practice medicine without restriction. And that's why it applied in this case. It's not the situation where you have a cancer patient who just simply can't, is ill and isn't there. Their medical license would not have been impacted. The Board of Medical Examiners does not place restrictions on your medical license just because you have a disability such as cancer. And I think that's
but a disability can lead to restrictions on your medical license, can it not?
It could. I imagine that it could. I don't, you know, in this particular case, I think it's important to note that if you read the stipulation for interim cessation of practice, which is at issue in this case, this whole notion, there's no finding of disability. And in fact, the trial court testimony from the physician, from the Colorado Physicians Health Program, the CPHP, Dr. Jay Shore, et cetera, they didn't make a finding that she was quote unquote disabled for purposes of this stipulation. They just made a determination that she was unsafe to practice medicine, and she voluntarily entered into the stipulation. So the what caused this, whether the disability caused the restriction, is frankly irrelevant under the terms of this agreement. The fact is, the agreement has to be enforced as written.
Do you, in your briefs, dispute that her license was restricted by the board because of the disability?
I do dispute that.
In your briefs, did you dispute that?
What we said is that she entered into a voluntary agreement, I believe, with the Colorado Board of Medical Examiners. If you look at the stipulation for interim cessation of practice, and I think this is in our briefs, Your Honor, it was a voluntary agreement that she entered into in order to avoid summary suspension proceedings that had been initiated, not really because of this disability. I mean, they say it's a disability, and you know, maybe there was a factual dispute about that, but the fact of the matter is that this doctor fired a gun, was intoxicated, endangered people. It happened in a residential neighborhood with around a school, et cetera. And when the Colorado Board of Medical Examiners got wind of that, and she was charged and arrested. And when they got wind of that, that's what caused these suspension proceedings to be, the summary proceedings to be initiated. And she stopped them by voluntarily entering into this stipulation. And so that's what occurred in this case.
Also, just a quick question. If we agree with you that the overhead policy proceeds belong to Horizon, shouldn't we also conclude that those proceeds in turn affect the value of the practice, perhaps increasing it?
Well, the first of all, the practice was valued as of December 19th, 2006. That's what the trial court found, because that's when this doctor entered into the interim cessation for practice. Those proceeds, some of those proceeds were received way after that fact, into 2007, and because the trial court concluded that she had to sell her membership interest when she lost her ability to practice medicine without restriction on December 19th, 2006. The $160,000 that she received was all received by her taking the financials that she obtained, claiming because that she had the right to them from Horizon. She turned them in and was able to get those proceeds. And with respect to the arguments that Ms. Hershey made on that, I want to make I think it's important to note that that overhead insurance policy was a reimbursement policy. And the trial court found that there was unjust enrichment here, and I think it's important to note that the standard of review on that is one of abuse of discretion, because this was a fact-intensive question as to whether or not there was unjust enrichment. And we had a reimbursement policy. The only way that any of the proceeds from that policy could be received is if the practice was incurring those expenses. And the only reason the practice stayed in business, and Dr. Bach got to take advantage of that, basically, and but for the fact that Horizon was incurring these expenses, she would never have gotten the proceeds, and she didn't actually contribute a dime into the period of time when she collected those proceeds.
Did Dr. Oster testify that at some point she and Dr. Bach had agreed that they would maintain these separate policies to cover overhead expenses for the benefit of Horizon?
They did.
There's evidence in the record.
There is evidence in the record that both of those, and I would point the court to some of the key testimony. Dr. Oster talked about this in her testimony, and the testimony of Mike Edwards, which is in the record, is very, very key, because he explains that he helped these doctors obtain that policy, and he explains that, in fact, that is exactly what they had planned to do.
Thank you, counsel. Yep. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments today. Case will stand submitted. Opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.